Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey guys, Ryan here. The Somewhere in the Skies podcast is a labor of love every week, and with that comes many different costs to keep the show running. That's where our Patreon campaign comes in. You give what you think the show is worth. There's different rewards available all the time, including shoutouts on the show, early editions of main episodes, bonus episodes and content, and very soon, monthly patron hangouts, where we sit back and chat all things UFOs. So I hope you'll consider becoming a Patreon subscriber today. To learn more and to join, visit patreon.com/somewhereskies. Thank you for your support, and keep looking up.
This is Somewhere in the Skies with Ryan Sprague.
Guys, Ryan Sprague here from Somewhere in the Skies. We're going to be talking to a gentleman today. We do have Christopher Sharp of the Liberation Times to thank for bringing this story forward and introducing us all to our guest today. His name is Adrian Reister. He is former USAF. And basically, Chris broke this story, and it's about Adrian's experiences that he had as a nuclear technician at Whiteman Air Force Base between the years of 2003 and 2007. I know on Somewhere in the Skies, we've talked a lot about UFOs over nuclear installations and power plants and stuff like that. So this is going to be pretty interesting to hear new stories about these things happening in very dramatic fashion, nonetheless, while actual nuclear ordnance was being transported. So I already have a bunch of listener questions already stacked up here. So without further ado, I'm going to bring him in, and we're going to get to know Adrian a little bit before we get into his experiences. So Adrian, thank you for joining me today on Somewhere in the Skies.
How's it going, man?
Good, good. I'm so happy you were able to do this. I know as soon as this story broke, I am sure that you got contacted by a lot of the UFO community.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I was one of those people who immediately, you know, stalked you down, and you were so gracious with accepting this invitation. So thank you for being here.
Not a problem, man. It's my pleasure.
Cool. Well, I mean, for those who may not know, you know, me included, really, who you are, where you come from, and all that. Could you sort of paint a picture for us of how you got interested in going into the Air Force? What led you to be a nuclear technician? Yeah, however you want to paint that picture for us.
Sure,
I'd appreciate
sure.
It. Cool.
Well, so I went to the Air Force pretty much right out of high school. Honestly, I slept a lot through high school. I didn't do a lot of my homework. I could pass the tests fairly easily, and that was not the issue. It was just doing my homework, right?
Right.
So I didn't really have great grades, but, you know, I was able to get in the Air Force, and I had about, I think it was a 97 on my ASVAB. So pretty much everything was open to me in the Air Force. And I had actually originally went in to go as EOD, Explosive Ordnance Disposal. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that. It is essentially the bomb squad of the military.
Wow.
And, you know, it is a really intensive, very difficult course. And unfortunately, I washed out of that course. And, you know, it was just one of those things. So after that, you know, I was kind of what they call a student out of training for about a month or two. And then that was when they decided they were going to throw me in nuclear weapons. Hey, you can't work on regular bombs, but you know what? We're going to have you work on these nuclear ones over here.
Makes sense. That's logical. Totally, man.
So, you know, I didn't really have any other choice but to accept, hey, yeah, I guess I'm going to go work on nuclear weapons. But, you know, it was a fairly interesting career field. There's a lot of secret stuff in it.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I know. Probably the stuff our audience really wants to know about. But what is like a typical day? What did it look like for you as a technician? I know it probably varied when your duties changed and whatnot, but like, are we talking like every day you were around these weapons and either
usually
working
every
with
day,
them,
no.
transporting? No. Okay.
Not every day. Without going into too big specifics, they have things called maintenance cycles. And during those maintenance cycles, when you're going to see a lot more weapons than when, you know, other things happen. So during those times is when, you know, you're going to be spending a little bit more time actually inside the secured rooms and all that kind of stuff. As a lower ranked airman, however, if you haven't had, you know, your training crew, you haven't gotten your training yet, or just they need extra bodies, you're going to be holding a gun, right?
Okay.
And that's essentially what I did for the first year or two when I was on base. And, you know, for one of those instances, we'll go on to that later, I'm sure. But I've held a lot of M16s, just looking at the sky, looking at the grass, you know. The area that I worked at was right next to the flight line. So I've been able to see B-2s take off. I've been able to see F-17 or F-117s. Oh, wow. Pretty much everything in the inventory that the Air Force has, short of like really big planes and just really specialized planes, then I've probably seen it. You know,
so you are well aware of the most advanced aircraft,
yeah.
Probably out there today,
yeah.
Being launched from your base, right? Okay,
yeah,
interesting. was this the only base you were stationed at?
Yeah.
In your time in the Air Force,
it was the only. Well, I mean, basic training was Lackland Air Force Base,
okay,
and then for the EOD training was technically Lackland as well, but it was like an annex. Called Medina. And after that, when I got to the nuke school, was in Wichita Falls. And then after that is when I got stationed at Whiteman.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Now, in terms of dealing with these weapons, I know, like you said, a lot of the time it was guarding and whatnot. But like, did you have to learn the ins and outs of every nuclear weapon on the base, or how did that work? Just in case, I would imagine.
I'm not going to say typically because, like I said, I only have experience from my first base. My base, we only had a handful of nuclear assets that we were required to like know in and out, right? And as you go from base to base, they kind of refresh you on different things, like if you were at a bomber base and you go to a missileer base, they're gonna have to teach you how to do missiles all over again. Despite the fact that you've already for your tech school, what they do is like give you a very not even a basic education. They kind of show you what this is and what that is and different things to look for. And when you get to your base, they have what you call TOs. And essentially if it's not on the TO, you don't do it. Right, you're trained monkeys. If monkeys could read, they could do nuclear weapon stuff.
Hey, man, but there's a lot of jobs like that. There's nothing wrong with that.
But yeah, I mean, shit, I forgot where was that?
Oh no. So yeah, so like you would physically deal with these nukes at time, and you also had to know how they function. Okay.
Yes.
Cool. Yes. Wow. I can't even imagine. Like the I used to be like an actor and stuff, and now I'm like a writer. And I'm just imagining like the pressure and the stress that you guys must be under, you know, maybe on a daily basis. I don't know. You tell me. But like, I can't imagine like having those sorts of things at your fingertips. I've spoken to launch officers who have seen some of the stuff we're going to talk about tonight as well over their installations, and knowing that like this could be it, like either either we got to push it or they've been dismantled somehow. Can't even imagine on a typical day working there, let alone when there's UFO sightings over an installation. Man,
it's actually fairly boring on a typical day.
So
it's
this
actually fairly boring.
Okay. Okay.
There's a lot of downtime. Well, not even downtime, but there's a lot of maintenance. There's a lot of maintenance to be done. Aside from the weapons, our actual like support systems we have to maintain as well. Like our launch loader adapters, our PLAs, our, you know, different trailers, all the different kinds of things, forklifts. And you know, we also have a support section. I'll go into about that later as well, where they also issue toolboxes and chemicals and gloves and, you know, anything that can support the nuclear operation, right?
Right. Interesting. So. Okay, yeah. And, you know, we have a few others in here who have held similar positions. And everything you're saying, man, is checking out. I do want to let everyone in the chat know we have vetted Adrian. He's legit. He is who he says he is. Because that is the first question on a lot of people's minds when military people come forward. So yeah, no, right. I appreciate you doing that.
DD214 right here.
Boom. Hey, if you want to throw it up there, man, be my guest, but I trust you. I worked with Christopher Sharp to do that as
awesome.
Well. So no, we appreciate that. So I guess before we get to what I know everyone wants to hear about the incidents, we'll get there, guys. We'll get there. How'd you get hooked up with Chris? Like, how did this all come about where you finally came forward and talked about this stuff? Did someone reach out to you, or there
no,
had to be a,
not really.
A time where you told somebody and it kind of trickled out? Like, how did that all happen, if I might ask?
So probably around the beginning of the year, I started listening to that UFO podcast.
Awesome.
With Andy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, as I was listening throughout the year, I finally was like, you know what? They're starting to talk about like shadow people. So maybe I can. What I did was like I commented on somebody else's topic in Twitter, and I was like, "Hey, I'm a nuclear weapons tech, and hey, I've seen stuff too." And that's pretty much when Chris found me, and he was like, "Hey, come talk to me."
Yeah, dude, if I had seen that, I would have been all over it. But no, I'm happy I saw Chris's article. Like literally, I think within maybe a minute or so of him posting it,
yeah.
I already was trying to track you down. So, okay, that's pretty cool. Well, let's get into it, if you don't mind. And I'm going to get to some of the chat here after we hear about your experiences.
Sure.
But yeah, Andy's going to be
questions in there already.
Absolutely. And I've got a bunch here for you, too. Andy's going to, his ego is going to go up tenfold after he hears you're the reason he that you came forward. But yes, McGrillin is the best. I agree,
yeah.
Christopher Plain, for sure. So let's get into it. 2003 to 2006 is when you were stationed, right, at Whiteman. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, so I originally got into the Air Force in 2003, and it wasn't until like 2000, probably like, I want to say the beginning of 2004, like January, because it had taken me about a year to get through training, you know?
Right.
And that's, I was in the Air Force from 2003 to 2007, but I wasn't at Whiteman until 2004.
For a nuclear technician, I would hope you'd get a good enough time of training. For
yeah.
Sure. That makes perfect sense to me. Well, okay. So could you paint us a picture maybe of the first experience you had? What were you doing that night? Was it night? What were your duties? And then, yeah, what happened, if you don't mind?
Sure.
Are you okay if I go full screen too, Adrian?
No, have at it.
Okay, awesome. All right, man. Have at it. Thank you.
So I don't really want to go into detail on what time the movement was, because I'm sure they still use that kind of time period, right? But I will just say it was dark enough for me to see that there were stars and stuff in the sky. Okay. And essentially was what I was doing is, we were probably right in the middle of a maintenance cycle, you know, and, they needed a gun guard. And as you are transporting a weapon or you have a structure that has weapons in it, you got to have a gun guard posted for, you know, security, as well as a gun guard posted wherever the weapon is going to be going to. Right. Mm-hmm. And on top of this, there's 24/7 security by security forces. So there's it's just kind of a redundant thing, Final Denial Act. And so as this transport team has radioed to me that they're now transporting the weapon, I see that there's kind of like an orb, for lack of better definition, or, you know, mm-hmm. it was just kind of bobbing there above the tree line. And I thought, yeah, okay, you know, maybe that's a star, you know, I've seen stars. They kind of do that sometimes, you know, and, you know, the weapon is still being transported down and I'm still kind of looking around, surveilling. It's my job, you know? Mm-hmm. And as the weapon kind of, or the transport team kind of pulls up with the weapon, this orb kind of shoots up real quick above the tree line and it kind of bobs there for a little bit. And, you know, the transport team is moving forward and backing the weapon into the facility. And then once they had secured the weapon inside the building, this orb just kind of zoop and gone.
How, about how big would you say? In terms of like distance and how high up was it? I know it's probably hard to gauge, but any further detail on that?
If from my guesstimation, like right off site at base, there's a bunch of like pig farms and just different kind of farms and fields and that kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. If I had to guess, I would say it was right above those, kind okay. of maybe a mile or two away, you know, kind of this way and then up. I couldn't tell you how far up it was. And if a size, I don't know. It was yeah. a light, essentially. Yeah. It was just a light to me. It was just.
But this 90 degree sort of, you know, acceleration, the, yeah. I guess, or movement, mm-hmm. that had to have stuck out to you as something.
Oh yeah.
Unconventional.
Yeah, and it was kind of like, okay, well, that was weird, but it didn't seem threatening at the time. And my job at that time is just to determine what's a threat. Right. You know, I'm literally there with a gun to make sure that nothing is coming in to grab our weapons. And if it's gone or something has disappeared, yeah, it's cool. I think I just saw a UFO, but whatever, you know, yeah. I got shit to do inside now.
That makes sense, man. I mean, a lot of people, even in the civilian world, when they see a UFO, like everyone's like, why didn't you like why wasn't your camera out? Or why didn't you like phone the police anything? Why didn't you do anything? Because a lot of people aren't prepared for those situations. And you also had a task at hand. I get
it. On top of that, camera phones were kind of barely coming out back then, right?
And 03, 04, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if you did have a camera on your phone, you were pretty much obligated to either break it or cover it up, paint it over. You're not allowed to have cameras inside a top secret weapon storage area.
That makes sense. Yeah. Which, you know, that's interesting to me because, you know, we hear about these Snoopy teams in the Navy that are on like the submarines and whatnot. And it's like, their mm-hmm. job to record things. And all mm-hmm. these videos that were leaked were like from cell phones. They weren't mm-hmm. like the official cameras. So that always makes me wonder, like, are they going to get in trouble for stuff like that? Like, I don't know.
That's not saying everybody didn't break their phone or paint over their camera, but that was what was required, you know, by mandate.
So what... If I can ask, I know you said you don't want to say what night and time, but what could you tell us maybe what year that was, Adrian, if you do recall?
I believe that was actually in 2005.
Five. Okay. Yeah. Now, was that the initial experience you had?
Yes. That was the first one that I came across. Yeah.
Right. And then you had one more UFO sighting, if I'm correct. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
Would you want to share that one next, or it's totally up to you, man?
Sure.
Okay.
In that specific instance, this is the third instance. We'll talk about the middle one here in a minute, I'm sure. So the third one, it wasn't really anything like that. It was essentially an orb kind of just hanging out over, I wouldn't even say over the flight line. It was just kind of a little bit over the base, and then it just kind of faded and it was gone, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was essentially when I was, again, holding gun. We had an exclusion area for contractors to come in, and that way they didn't have to have classified clearances in order to work in the storage area. And we essentially created like a, what they called a free zone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my job is to watch them and everything else going around. And that's just something I saw, kind of an orb kind of blinking, and then it was just gone. And for all I know, I wouldn't even particularly say that was a UAP. It feels maybe even a little different. It was very similar to in color and size and, you know, pretty much everything exact. But I couldn't tell you if that was a UAP or not, man.
I understand that. Yeah. No, I mean, and again, like even as a quote unquote UFO investigator or a trained observer like yourself looking for threats, I mean, your job is to explain what it is, not to say that's a spaceship from Zeta Reticuli. So,
right.
Like, no, I totally get it. So before we get to, I know the experience a lot of people are talking about on UFO Twitter right now, which is crazy. No, these were not reported. Was there anyone else around you who happened to see these things, or did anyone talk about it, or were these singular experiences for you?
They were pretty much singular experiences for me, man. Like, the transport team was busy stowing the weapon. I'm the only one out there with a gun, holding a gun outside the facility. Now, I can't say for sure, and nobody else saw it, but I was the only one that was around me that was able to see it.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Again, like you guys are, you're a little busy doing other stuff. I get it. Okay. So let's dive in. This is the experience I think that caught a lot of people's attention. You know, we've heard of UFOs over the bases, but shadow figures, not something us in the UFO world deal with on a daily basis, not things we really deal with in this field at all. It's usually pushed to the corners of the paranormal,
right?
The supernatural, what have you. But this happened to you. At least you believe it happened to you. So I would love, if you don't mind, man, as long as short as you want, going into detail. I know there's stuff you probably can't share exactly where you were and whatnot. But tell us this story if you don't mind.
So I want to preface this by saying, I had originally not said anything about this particular instance because in my experience or my, any information that I've gotten, you know, I've watched Ghost Hunters for years, you know, to me, shadow people were mostly associated with like ghosts, right?
Right.
The paranormal stuff like that. And when I started seeing that, the shadow people were more being reported towards UAP, especially that Nellis incident, that really kind of like, oh man, you know, if they were seeing something like that, then maybe what I saw here could have been the same thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And in kind of, as you're doing this critical thinking kind of thing, you know, you think all the observances that I've seen from this, everybody else's experiences with shadow people on the ghost side as well, it feels kind of like it's one and the same thing, just about. It feels like one and the same thing. I could be wrong. You know, I'm not an expert.
None of us are.
But that's all I wanted to say by prefacing that.
Cool.
So this instance was, I think, in 2006. It was in probably the fall. No, it was the spring. It was the spring, because that's when we usually get new recruits. We were out of a maintenance cycle, so there wasn't any maintenance being done. And typically, whenever we're not doing any maintenance, we're training crews. The more people we got, the easier it is for everybody else, right? Mm-hmm. So we have a training crew in the back. And as a training crew has a training bum open, it's still considered technically classified. And in doing so, we have to lock up the building. You know, we pin it from the inside. We have pins on the top and the bottom of the doors. And then if the building hasn't been opened, or that door hasn't been opened in, you know, a day or two, it probably still has this tamper-proof seal. And
oh, okay.
That's a big thing in a lot of places, is those tamper-proof seals. Is there's no getting past that, man. You know, you can't, right. You can't fake that.
Right, right.
So, you know, the training crew is in the back. I'm in the weapons support area, because I had just transitioned from doing the nuclear operations side to doing weapons support side. I was essentially issuing toolboxes, chemicals, helping issue anything they needed for their training, you know. And as they were locked away, I was, you know, on the computer doing my own thing, you know. We had, I think, an armory or something that we were looking at buying at the time. And as I'm sitting there on the computer, just kind of clicking, I think what I hear is like water dropping, or maybe footsteps, bare footsteps. And which is a possibility. We have, you know, an eye wash station, and we have those, the emergency showers. And, you know, so I turn around, I look up, and I'm trying to see, you know, is there anything there? I think I hear somebody walking, or footsteps, or is it water? Or because if it's water, I gotta clean that, you know? And so I didn't see anything, and I'm looking at the shower, and it wasn't leaking. So, all right, well, I'm just fucking hearing things, you know, and I go back to doing whatever I was doing. And, you know, maybe a minute or two passes, and I start hearing those sounds again, you know, this time a little bit louder, kind of barefoot on painted cement sound, if you know what that sounds like. Kind of like at a swimming pool, you know?
Okay.
Kind of like that. That wet barefoot sound on concrete.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this time it's pretty distinct, and I just whirl around and I stand up and I look past the service counter, and all I can see is just this blob. not blob, but like the shape of a person.
Do you like stories of the strange, the weird, and the unexplained? Then we want you to check out Jim Harold's Campfire. The concept is pretty simple. Jim talks to regular people about strange stuff that happens to them. And yes, that includes UFOs, along with cryptids, ghosts, and head scratchers. He doesn't exaggerate or play a lot of spooky music, kinda like I'm doing right now. The stories speak for themselves. One's like a ghost story involving serial killer Ted Bundy, or the young man who encountered an eight-legged demon. Then there's the story of an alien abduction by what could be considered a reptilian. Now, not all the stories are horrifying. Some are actually pretty heartwarming, like a visit from a past loved one or a peaceful near-death experience. Regardless, these are true and fascinating stories told by ordinary people who've had extraordinary experiences. Tune in to Jim Harold's Campfire on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to Somewhere in the Skies. And remember, stay spooky.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I was trying to describe it to my wife, and she's like, so like, kind of like a gingerbread man, but like fuzzy, right? And that's kind of essentially
what it was. Yeah.
it was a little bit narrower than your classic gingerbread man, you know, kind of a shape of a real person, you know. They were asking me last night, I was on a podcast about how tall, and you know, I'm 5'4", man. So
I know your pain.
and everybody is taller than me.
Same.
So, you know, I guesstimating this thing to be about 6 foot tall. It was, again, I want to say very blurry and very opaque, like towards the center, very opaque. And again, another way for me to describe the color is if you've known or if you've seen that that dye that pretty much absorbs all light. Have you seen that?
Oh,
they just came out with it. At
midnight black, like
kind of like
doesn't
that.
Reflect any. Okay. Kind of yes. Absorbs light. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And interesting. That's essentially like what it looked like it or the color of it. Right. And as I get up and I'm starting to make my motions towards chasing this thing down, and it just zips down the wall and turns the corner into the admin section, and I'm just fucking booking it, you know? And as I turn the corner, I don't see anything. I don't hear anything, you know, and it's now my obligation to go around and look for this thing, you know? And as I'm going through, I don't see anything like underneath chairs or tables. You know, we only have a snack bar in that section, some offices, a conference room. There's not really a lot of places for this thing to hide in, you know? And in order for it to have left the actual building, was the only way was through the front door. And as I've described it before, it's an airlock system style door. Mm-hmm. You know, you essentially go through one set of doors, right? You go into like an antechamber, and then from the antechamber, somebody lets you actually into the building. And then you go through the secondary set of doors. Not an airlock, as in removing air, just kind of that barrier system, you know? And in order for anything to have left the building, it needed to leave that, which is pretty noisy. You're going to know whenever somebody's leaving the building. Mm-hmm. You know, you can almost hear it in the back of the bay, you know?
Yeah. Were you armed at this time, Adrian?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. I was just curious.
Yeah, you don't arm unless there's an actual asset in the building or there's an asset in transport.
Gotcha. Okay. So how did this end for you? I mean, I can't even imagine what was going through your head, first of all, but like, did you, I know, again, the stigma of reporting paranormal mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. UFO sort of things in the military is one thing, but like, mm-hmm. what were you thinking? Did you think this was like an intruder or that the world was ending or you were getting haunted? Like, I guess, yeah. What was going through your head at that time?
I didn't know what the hell I had seen, man. Like, as far as I knew, it was a ghost, you know, like,
okay.
And even if I had thought it was some kind of incursion or infiltration of some sort, I don't have any physical evidence on me that there was somebody here. You know, there's no sensors being tripped. There's no video evidence. There's nothing. There's essentially me saying, hey, I think I saw something running down the hallway. You know, mm-hmm. They're going like, oh, yeah, sure you did. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. We're going to need to call the mental facility people. You know? Because when you have top secret clearance, man, and you have PRP at the same time, it's a very stigmatized thing that you cannot lose your top secret clearance or your PRP because you're going to lose your job, right? They're going to find a way for you to get out.
Right.
They will find a way for you to leave the military. And I've seen people raise questions of, oh, well, PRP is really not a reason to remain silent. Well, sure, it's not. But I really don't like being called crazy either. You know, I don't.
Well, yeah, man. And I mean, in your defense as well, like how many pilots haven't reported things? How many, you know, people on the ground who've had these experiences didn't? Yeah.
On top of that, I'm 20 years old at the time. Yeah. I'm just a kid, man. You know, maybe 19. You know, I don't actually really remember what age I was at the time, but man, it was, I was young, you know, young. Yeah. And yeah, exactly. As I see Mr. Crowley down there just say, mm-hmm. they find a way for you to leave. They'll start a paperwork trail.
Well, that, and I'm sure there are psych evals after you report something like this. We hear pilots are grounded and never fly again. I get it, man. Mm-hmm. And luckily, mm-hmm. hopefully, things are changing in certain branches of the military. I do want to get your thoughts on that a little later on the sure. Air Force yeah. versus others. But so, you know, you didn't find any presence of this shadow figure. And then that's it. Was that your last experience you had while at Whiteman?
That was my last experience at Whiteman. Well, technically, it was my second experience. My last right. one was that orb that just blinked and disappeared. And that was my last experience. I mean, shortly thereafter, I separated anyway. So,
okay. Yeah. Okay. Before we get to some of the bigger questions, do you think any of these events were connected in any way? Like, is there some sort of string theory between what you saw in the sky and the shadow? I know that's a total theorizing question, but yeah, what do you think?
Man, I couldn't say that they were corroborated with each other. Mm-hmm. They were just maybe if I had seen one within a week of each other or of the shadow person and an orb or whatever, but these were very separate instances over a spread amount of time. And
right.
I probably should have, but I didn't actually go outside to see if there was an orb in the sky the night that I saw a shadow person. And again, I didn't even know that it was UAP related, you know, or UFO at that time related. And so
had you had any interest in UFOs or paranormal or yeah. anything before you went in? Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've always been interested in it my whole life. My grandfather was kind of instilled that in me. He was the one that originally was interested in this. And, you know, when I was a kid, my parents actually took me to, we were driving through and we saw the Marfa lights and that was pretty interesting.
Really?
Yeah, that was, I highly recommend that to anybody. Go look at the Marfa lights.
That's in Texas, right?
Yes.
Is that where you're originally from? If you don't mind sharing.
No. I am. Well, yeah, I'm from Texas. I'm from El Paso, Texas. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Marfa lights. That's mm-hmm. that's a phenomenon that deserves a lot more attention, man. Well, okay. I mean, there's so many different avenues we could take. I mean, the first is the fact that, like, if this was some sort of intelligence or sentient thing that was in there with you, that is disturbing. I mean, the implication to something like that, it's just, and then you think so many other people in your position have had similar experiences on bases or in other areas as well. What do you think about the whole potential threat of something like that? Again, I know you didn't report it and that's like going to piss off so many people, but again, we understand why you wouldn't do that. But like, the potential threat of something like that just gives me chills just knowing, you know.
And I have to agree with them. You know, I probably should have reported it, but there wasn't there wasn't any system for me to report this for, or, you know, there was no, did you see this, then report it here. Did you see that, then report it here. You know, if you've seen shadow people, report it to this guy. You know, that was never a thing, man, you know?
That's such a good point. Okay. So I guess where I want to take it next, man, if you don't mind, nuclear bases and UFOs in general, I mean, hundreds of these incidents have been reported. Probably hundreds have not been. So we don't know the true number, but do you personally think there is a connection between UAP, whatever that phenomena represents, and an interest in our nuclear assets here on the planet? What are your personal thoughts on that?
Okay. So going back to your question before about the threat.
Yes, sorry. I'm getting ahead of ourselves.
You're good. I'm going to kind of wrap this all up into cool. One. The orbs themselves did not seem like threats to me, because otherwise I would have... That's even more of a thing that I think I would have reported, the orbs. You know, but again, they were not... They're just lights in the sky at that point. You know, they're not things on the ground with a weapon pointed at me. So they're not a threat. And then, so on top of that, the shadow person, I didn't even know what it was. So how can I tell if that's a threat or not? If it's a ghost, how is that a threat? You know,
good point.
If it's a ghost, how is that a threat? If it's,
we're not in the ring, you know, here, guys. Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
And I didn't know that this was I want to just hammer on that, man. I did not know that this was associated with UAP phenomenon. I, for all I knew, it was a ghost. You know, I had thought that Whiteman was built on top of an Indian burial ground, for all I knew, you know.
Who knows? I know that, you know, well, that's a good point, actually. I mean, We always think of military bases and UFOs, but like, imagine the history of things that have happened during the, you know, these bases being in service and not in service, and what was there before it. Of course, there's going to be paranormal activity as well. So, dude, I mean, the possibilities are endless. But yeah, sorry, I don't want to interrupt your thought there.
You're good, man. And then, so to shift it over to the association with UAPs and nuclear bases, right?
Yeah.
Somebody did mention that there's a lot of sightings that are outside of nuclear bases. There's like 95% of sightings outside of nuclear bases. And a lot of those are probably very credible witnesses as well. And the reason I think that nuclear bases are being looked at more hard is because they're nuclear bases, you know? Once we have these UAP associated with them and they seem kind of interested in them, they might be interested in maybe stopping us from doing something. Maybe they're, because if you look back at history, the last two nuclear weapons that were used were in World War II, right? And we haven't used them since then. And once we entered into that treaty with Russia, we stopped testing them. And we haven't used nuclear weapons, even tested a nuclear weapon in 50-odd years, you know? And so they might try to be preventing that, you know? They could be trying to gain information about them. Maybe they don't actually use nuclear energy. Maybe they use something else.
Right.
Maybe they have their own treaties that are preventing them from letting us use more nuclear weapons, right? For all we know, UAPs could be a myriad of other things out there. Like, try not to take me for my word, or not my word, but like, don't read too far into this, but let's say they're aliens, right? If they're aliens, who's to say it's one species of aliens, right?
Right.
It could be multiple species of aliens that have had maybe a treaty with each other, right? To allow us to develop and maybe not kill ourselves until we can reach a certain amount of stage where they can actually contact us again, right? And that's what I hope for.
Yeah, man.
But we'll see.
I hope if there are various races or intelligence out there that they want to send us a message of don't use these. But like you said, like there could be one that wants to turn them on, one that wants to turn them off, one that wants to see what we do with them, and one that wants to literally actively engage with these weapons somehow. Mm-hmm. So possibilities are endless, man. And I think it's those questions, those theories that tell us a lot about ourselves, you know, no matter what, if they want to turn them on or off, it's the fact that a lot of unexplained phenomena is happening over these bases. So we should pay attention to that and wonder why that's happening. On either end of the spectrum, in my opinion. But I've got one more question for you, Adrian, before I move to listener questions, if that's cool.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. So the Air Force, elephant in the room, haven't been the most transparent or honest about UFOs. They were essentially the branch of the military that quote unquote covered up the phenomena from the very beginning, if you consider Roswell or Kenneth Arnold or all that stuff in the 40s that happened. They were kind of the first to stamp it down in Project Blue Book, Project Grudge, Project Sign, all these Air Force funded in some ways and also run organizations to kind of downplay the phenomena and explain it away, which, you know, yeah, they should try to do that. But they don't have the best track record when it comes to transparency and honesty, nor are they today. I mean, we're living in a world now where we're getting a Pentagon UFO unit, and the most silent on all of this seems to have been the Air Force. So I'd love to get your thoughts as former USAF on that. Why do you think that is? What role do you think the Air Force played then and plays now in this whole, I guess, UFO issue?
So we'll go back to like Roswell, right? The Air Force was originally the one that kind of took, well, it was actually, I think, the Army Air Force at that time, but the Air Force was the initial people there that kind of ran that operation. They kind of, and ever since then, they've been in the foreground of this, you know? Mm-hmm. I would say that they probably have information. I don't know. You know, I have no access to this. I have no idea, but this is just my guesstimation, you know, but they have to have something, you know, they've collected something in Roswell. They collected different other places that other different crashes, you know? So there's gotta be some documentation there, whether it's UAP or weather balloon related. I don't know why they haven't released this documentation.
Yeah, so 70 years later, you have to wonder, you know.
Right. And so, you know, throughout history, the Air Force has been kind of seen as this organization that is a forefront of UAP, right? Oh, they got Project Blue Book. Oh, they got this and they got that, and they're looking at UFOs, and they're really not. They're just kind of making it go away. Mm-hmm. And I think now they're being kind of stonewall-y because they used to be at the forefront, and now they're kind of, I think they might be just holding back and waiting to see what's going on.
What happens.
Right. Right. And then from there, and I'm talking about the Air Force as an organization. It's really difficult to characterize the organization and not talk about the people, you know,
right?
Because there's a lot of people in the Air Force, I'm sure, that want this to come out as well, you know.
Good point.
I'm probably pretty sure, actually.
Yeah, man. I mean, we do look at these things, you know, the military branches or even the government as this like capital G or like this, you know, monotheistic thing, when in reality it's comprised of thousands of people with their own individual beliefs and principles. I totally get that. That's a good point.
Really, it's disclosure is only held back by maybe handful of people, maybe two handfuls of people. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, people high up. So I don't want to demonize the Air Force in that regard, because they're acting within our country's best interest, but I don't think that the people at the top are acting within our best interest. If that makes sense.
Absolutely, man. I get it. I totally get it. Yeah. And I mean, the word disclosure, I'll touch on that briefly with you. We are living in crazy times. Never in my lifetime did I think we would see the government getting so heavily involved in this topic again. I thought they were done with it. And a lot has happened, you know, since that New York Times article came out, since the Navy tic-tac UFOs and the things going on the East Coast, blah, 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 blah. The conversation has just exploded, and it's more mainstream, I think, than ever before. So do you think what's going on now with this Pentagon unit that's being formed, we're going to get, like, I think, annual reports to the public about UAP. A lot of it's going to be classified, obviously. But is this, do you think, a good thing for those who really want the answers to all of this? Or is, like you said, is this just another way for them to kind of control the narrative? And or is this all just an intelligence game? We have to keep in mind Russia, China, and that whole aspect to all of this, too. They say it's not them. But I don't personally believe that some of it is probably foreign technology. But yeah, that was a big broad stroke of a question. But yeah, what do you think about everything going on today with the Pentagon? And is this disclosure, or is this just another way to hide it all?
I think it feels legitimate enough that it will be disclosure. In my opinion, the biggest issue, like I said, the Air Force, people. It's not the organization. It's not the office. It's the people in the office. So if the person there doesn't want to do anything or is counter UAP, it's going to be not productive, you know? And that's what we have to be very careful about, who we put in those offices or in those positions, you know? And I'm not saying we have to throw in the most crazy UFO guy, you know, we'll go throw Andy in the office, you know?
If they're hiring dude, I'm there too, man. I think I'm a little objective sometimes. Right, I think hopefully that's what they want, but yeah, sorry.
I mean, why not? Just if they're looking for people to throw in that office, I'd like to throw my hat in there too, you know?
Right.
But again, we just have to be very careful on who we select and make sure they're not the Mick Wests and make sure they're not the Stephen Greers, you know.
I knew you were going to say that name. So
and I don't mean to harp on Stephen Greer, because he, at the very beginning, was very crucial in getting this this conversation started. And
I will not take that away from him, for sure.
Yeah, we are very, we owe a lot to him, you know, and maybe, for all we know, he's still telling the truth, and we're just being a bunch of idiots. You know, I'm not trying to disprove the guy.
I've said that in the past too, man. What if these people are right? What if these people who have claimed they've flown to Venus or been channeling aliens or whatever Stephen Greer's talking about, the latest sort of stuff, what if they are right? I can't say they're not.
If we're seeing shadow people, who's to say what he's seeing isn't real either?
Right.
You know, I mean, it's until we have the truth, anything is on the table pretty much.
Yeah, very good point. Well, I know a lot of people in the chat are dying to ask some questions. I do have some questions here, guys. So if you do want, we'll try to get to some of the questions in the chat here, guys. If you want to help the show, the super chat is open. That'll get you bumped to the top. But I do have some already here for you, man. So I can just start firing off right now if you want, if you're good with that.
Yeah.
Cool. Ben Prime Esquire on Twitter asks, when pursuing the shadow intruder, was its movements and gait like a human, or was there anything about its movement that seemed strange or like super unusual or abnormal? Yeah. Anything like that?
Well, it didn't float.
Okay.
It didn't fly. It's taller than me, so if it's going to be running, it's going to be a little bit faster than I am. So I did see its legs moving as it was running. So it was, I would assume, still kind of gravity had some kind of effect on it, you know? I would assume, who knows, you know? Yeah. But if it's literally running and I can hear barefoots, to me, that says that gravity still affects it a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Interesting. Good point. Yeah. And I really respect that you're willing to say, I don't know on any of this. Cause yeah, I mean, who's to really say? So no, that's a good sign. So Aspiring Inside on Twitter asks, did you experience any hitchhiker effects like reported at Skinwalker Ranch? I mean, did any of this sort of phenomena follow you home then after you left the Air Force or?
Not that I can tell. I mean, I've had bad luck my entire life, so I can't tell if it's bad luck or just hitchhiker effect, but
yeah,
it's from everything that I've experienced, man, I haven't had that thing following me like that.
No sort of after effects or other experiences that you can think of?
No.
Good. No. That's probably a good thing. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Let's see. Becky on Twitter asks, did you discuss your encounters with any friends or colleagues at the base? And did any of them have similar experiences? Anyone else on base ever share anything weird with you while you were there?
And usually whenever you come across something weird, it's under the guise of like, man, I thought I saw a ghost yesterday, or hey, it's ghost related, because that is a lot easier for people to kind of digest than aliens, I guess, you know?
yeah.
But so a lot of those conversations were under that guise of, oh, well, I thought I heard a ghost yesterday, and, or, oh, I felt cold, or just ghost related mm-hmm. phenomenon. And it was okay. Cool. All right. Whatever, man. Yeah. And there were a lot of things that, this sounds really weird, I'm just going to stick it in the vault and let it sit there, you know?
Totally. I get it. This is a good one right here. Christopher Plain says, who was the first person you told after, I guess, any of these experiences?
The first person I told was actually, I don't even think I told my wife. Wow. I told my wife.
She found out yesterday with the rest of us.
Right. So this thing has been kind of in my vault. I call it my vault because it's the place that I stick things and I don't want to think about them and they're gone for.
It's fair.
You know, I pretty much got that from the show Adventure Time, you know, where Finn kind of just sticks things in the back of his head and they disappear.
Life lessons from Adventure Time. I love right? it. You're a man after my heart.
And so, you know, it's been sitting back there and I never really gave it a second thought until maybe a couple months ago. And the first person I told was maybe Chris. Maybe wow. Chris, I think, was the first person I had actually told. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome, man. And again, I do want to commend Chris on getting this out and commend you for trusting him with this. It was a wonderful article. I did link it at the top, guys, but if not, go over to Liberation Times and it's probably still the featured article over there to check it out about everything we're talking about tonight. My dad actually is in the chat here, man. He never chimes in, but he was really interested to hear your stories tonight. So he asks, what did your wife say when you did tell her about this?
She was like, well, my wife is very supportive of me, and you know, we've been kind of, or I have been kind of open about the UAP topic for, you know, for a while now. And as I'm telling her this, she goes, oh, that's weird, man. You know, that's interesting. You should tell somebody that, you know, and yeah. just talk about it and kind of get out what you got to say about it, you know? And
yeah,
she's been supportive and I can't falter for that, you know?
Yeah, man, that's all you can ask for. I have a very supportive significant other too, who deals with these UFO things that are mm-hmm. basically my second significant other. So I totally get it.
I totally get it. Yep. I spent a lot of time listening.
Yep. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And they are very supportive. Michael Huntington, who's also in the chat right now, he asked over on Twitter too, what was the culture at the base like in regards to the subject? We kind of talked about that, but he also mentions that the 509th Bomb Group was connected to Roswell and also with your base as well. Did anyone talk about Roswell at the base? Any stories ever go through there that you heard of? No?
No. Which I also, it's something I brought up to Chris Sharp as well. I found it really fascinating when once I got to Whiteman, I found out that it was a 509th Bomb Wing, and I was like, that sounds familiar. Why does the 509th sound familiar? And, you know, through my research of doing UFO stuff, Roswell is obviously the hallmark. You know, that's the first thing you stop at. And, hey, the 509th Bomb Wing. Oh, that's where I know them from, you know?
And if I had known that, I would have taken more pictures while I was stationed there. Yeah, dude, right. I get it. What's your favorite case? That's a personal question of mine. Do you have a favorite UFO case?
I don't really have a favorite case. I kind of listen to everything, and I take everything as a whole, man. Like everything from ancient aliens all the way to quantum theory, you know?
Nice. Run the gamut. I love it. Mm-hmm. Hey, this is coming from a guy who's now on Ancient Aliens after talking bad about the show for almost God, 10 years now. They finally roped me in. So I'm with you. I'm kind of, you know, everything's on the table until it's not. So I'm open to a lot more than I used to be completely honest. I become skeptical in some ways and more open to others. So and that's welcome to ufology.
It's a good thing to have a healthy skepticism because otherwise you're not going to be able to rule out the fantastical, you know, the stuff that's just so out there that it doesn't make sense, you know?
Yep. Absolutely. Thank you to Jordan for the super sticker. Yeah, guys, if you want to ask Adrian a question before we start wrapping things up here, he's been very gracious with his time. Throw him in the super chat. I will try to get to him. But I'm going to go right to the next one here, Adrian. JB on Twitter asks, did you have any unusual dreams in the days leading up to or after any of these events? Do you think dreams play any role in this sort of stuff?
Dreams are a different thing for me because I don't typically remember my dreams or have dreams. I don't remember my dreams, or like I said, I don't have them. So
me either. Interesting.
I couldn't tell you if I had weird dreams or not. I just don't remember them. So yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's totally fair. Yeah. Cause a lot of people do often relate the two, especially when it comes to like abductions and alien abductions, sleep paralysis, dreams, hypnagogic dreams. So that's a fair question, but the fact that you don't remember your dreams, that says it right there, my man. And the day you do, it probably means something. So yeah,
every once in a while I'll remember like a dream or two or like snippets out of a dream, but that's about it.
Yeah, same. It's kind of little tiny fragments, like, one little film piece of a whole roll or something. Mm-hmm. I get it. Cool. Chirps Golden on Twitter asks, were there any odors present during the encounter with the shadow person? And what were your sleeping habits like following the days after? I mean, could you sleep after this event, dude? I can imagine it was pretty weird and, I don't know, traumatic, dramatic. I don't know.
Well, I'm an insomniac, so I don't sleep very much to begin with. so I'd probably say I slept about the same, if maybe a little less, maybe a little less. It didn't really bother me because, like I said, I kind of just put it out of sight, out of mind, and it just disappeared for me. I compartmentalized it, essentially, you know?
Right. Put it in the vault. I get it. Mm-hmm. I totally get it. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, I've got one more Twitter question here for you. If you guys want to put a question in, do it now. We're going to be wrapping things up here. But Fake Jalal on Twitter asks, what is your perception of reality after having these experiences? And have you had any significant changes in your life or lifestyle after these encounters? They're getting deep.
I wouldn't say I've had any like significant changes in my life or lifestyle. Maybe I would say I look up a lot more often. You know, I critically think more often, or not more often, but I've taken a lot more critical thinking. I tend to rule out more stuff than I don't, you know. And I just, healthy skepticism is really what kind of came out of this all for me, you know, kind of, well, I've seen this and I've seen this and I've seen this and, you know, I have this to go off of. And now I've seen this and this doesn't make any sense to me. So I'm just going to throw it out or I got to figure out how to fit it in this square peg in this round hole somehow, you know?
Right. Interesting. Yeah. I, you know, and I'm a person of the human aftermath of these sort of things, man. Like, how does it affect your belief system, your relationships? How does it change you as a person? So, I mean, I think it's good that, like, in some ways you're like, okay, this has opened up certain aspects of what this all could be. But I also have to be very careful and not to go too far out. You know, that whole cliche, you know, your brains will fall out if you're too open-minded sort of thing. So,
right.
Yeah, it's good to keep it kind of grounded. That's our slogan here. Keep your feet on the ground, but don't stop searching, you know? So I totally get that. I totally get that. Let's see if we have anything in the chat here before we wrap up. Christopher Plain says, does Adrian find himself building mashed potato mountains?
Can't say that I have.
not happening. No close encounters of the third kind.
No, can't say that I have. That's I wish. That would be amazing. Please take me. I'm ready to go.
Take them to, what is it? Superstition Mountain? Is that what it's called? Yeah. Fair enough, I mean.
You know, any UAPs out there, man, if y'all UAPs are listening, I'm ready to go. I got my bag packed.
He's ready. He's ready for another experience. I guess kind of my last question for you, Adrian. Why'd you come forward? What really compelled you? I know you said you know, you listened to Andy's show and whatnot, but was there any like really deep conviction as to why you wanted to share these, why you were willing to come out and say this? Because look, no matter how mainstream UFOs become or whatever, or the paranormal, there are going to be people who scoff at it or think, oh, he imagined this, or he was definitely high that night at work, or, you know, that's always going to be there. But what really compelled you, I guess, deep down to share these stories with us?
Essentially, man, like, there's no reporting mechanism for anybody, right? And they want more transparency in the UAP topic, right? Especially with this new office that has come to light. And, you know, all these people that have had prefix experiences, there's not been anything for them to come out, or a way for them to come out, or maybe even feel comfortable to come out and say anything. And it's through me doing this that I'm hoping that I make a wide enough path for them to kind of follow through, or just people who to talk to, or, you know, just different, a way for them to get out what they have to say, you know?
Yeah.
And ultimately, man, it's about the people. There's, I'm sure, people that have had experiences similar to mine that don't feel comfortable coming out and saying this, or don't feel comfortable, you know, just telling other people what they've seen. You know, and again, like, top secret clearance and PRP, it's a big thing. And if they're going to end up losing their PRP or top secret clearance over this, why say anything? So maybe they really need to just start allowing them to say something, you know. I'm all for UAP transparency. I what was it? Amnesty. UAP amnesty is something that I would like to hashtag, you know, I've seen it before, hashtag UAP amnesty. And because people, we need the truth, honestly, is essentially what I'm trying to get at, is I would just like the truth. And I think we deserve it at this point.
Awesome. Do you think we'll ever get there? At least in, we were born in the same year, so in our lifetime, we'll get there?
I'm hoping so. I mean, things have certainly picked up pace within the last, even the last year, you know?
Yeah.
It's been a breakneck speed, so I'm pretty confident within the next 5 to 10 years, probably we'll see something.
I love that. I love the optimism for sure, man. Well, I mean, obviously, thank you for your service to our country. But thank you also for being willing to talk about this, because I do think you're going to compel others and empower others to come forward, not just military, but in the civilian world as well. I can't tell you, after, you know, I came out with my book in 2020, where I interviewed the chief radar operator of the Tic Tac event, and this affected him so greatly, and keeping it down hidden in that vault, like you said, for so long, it almost ruined his life. So when he saw, you know, Commander Fravor on television talking about it, it was like 20 years just like off his shoulders, man. I can't tell you, after that chapter in my book came out, after all these reports came out and everything, how many military people came to people like me and Andy and journalists and everyone in between and said, finally, like, I can talk about this without, you know,
there's
the stigma and
place
ridicule
for me.
So, I mean, it's people like you who are willing to do that, that we really appreciate in the UFO world, because you do lend a certain credibility and legitimacy. Maybe more than a civilian. I don't really like having that debate of trained observers and, you know, the barista at the coffee shop. But the more people who come forward and talk about this, the more we can normalize it for everyone. So, yeah, first and foremost, I want to thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem.
If we have anything left in the chat here before we say goodnight to you, man, everyone's just loving it. That's what I like to hear. We didn't piss anyone off or anything like that. I don't see how that could happen, man. You've been so open with us. Are you willing to share where we can reach you? We got your Twitter handle here, but if anyone wants to reach out to you, is this the best place?
Yeah, Twitter is probably the best place to reach out to me with UAP stuff, because that's where I spend most of my time doing UAP stuff.
Nice. Awesome. Awesome. Michael says, thank you, guys. Christopher says, thank you for sharing. This was fascinating, dude. I really appreciate you taking the time to do it. I know you're going to be on the Unidentified Celebrity Review next week with Luis Jimenez. I can't wait to tune into that. Hopefully this was, you know, kind of the introduction for what's going to be unraveled over there next week. So once again, man, I'll say goodnight to you before I do my little talk shop thing here, debrief. So thank you. Thank you for coming forward. Thank you for working with Chris. And yeah, have a great night.
Thanks, man.
Awesome. Take care, Adrian.
You too.
Awesome, guys. That was so much fun. I can't believe within the span of like 48 hours, I met Adrian here digitally, and he just he seems like a really cool guy, very genuine in his experiences and what happened to him. And again, like, that's what we need in this field, is more people to talk about it, make it normal, and the floodgates just open wide. There will be too many people who've had experiences to deny these phenomena exist. And we're baby steps. We're making it. You know, the US government says UFOs exist. They are real. They are a legitimate phenomenon. That's huge. Now the question is, what are they? Where do they come from? What do they want? And there's probably a million questions to ask after that as well. Warlock, thank you so much for the super chat. I appreciate it. Thank you to everyone in the chat tonight for asking questions, for your donations. I really appreciate it. Adrian's in the chat as well. It was a pleasure. If I didn't get your questions, feel free to post them to me on Twitter. That's awesome, guys. Reach out to him there. And I will, once again, I will share his Twitter handle in the show notes. And other than that, be on the lookout for a new episode of Ancient Aliens premiering on Friday. I think I'm in that one. I'm not positive. But yeah, Friday's at 9 on the History Channel. Share the show with your friends. It would be much appreciated. And rate and review the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify. I think Spotify has a place where you can rate and review now. So that's pretty cool. That really helps out the show more than you guys think. It, you know, it boosts us up into the featured things over there. So I really appreciate that. And of course, as always, keep your feet on the ground, but never stop searching somewhere in the skies. Take care, guys.
Somewhere in the Skies is produced by Third Kind Productions in association with the Entertainment One Podcast Network.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.